Honorable Skyler, the Honorable Papa. So let's get the nomination.
How do you want power?
My name is James Vincent, a permanent delegate from KwaZulu-Natal, also a member of this committee. I nominate the Honorable Dikgale.
The name of Honorable Dikgale has been proposed. I will check with Honorable Dikgale if she's accepting the nomination. Oh, okay. She accepted the nomination. The second nomination?
No opposition.
No opposition. Honorable Father? Honorable Father? Honorable Papa nominated himself. So there we have it. Honorable Dikgale, we come.
Papa, you are not in this again, not in our lifetime. I'm here, you know that I put you on the side.
Coffee, so
I'm here. Oh, it's careful.
Good morning, honorable members. And the officials from the department, our visitors for today. I just want to say to the honorable Faber that if you are at the sea and the water is touching, you try to touch on the water. If you cannot touch on the very same space that you want to touch, honorable Faber, you won't even touch it because the water is not stagnant, it's touching. So for you to chair this committee, must just forget. So it won't happen this time. Honorable members and our pardon? That one is not a choice. Jesus will come one day. Our DG, our staff members. Good morning. Maybe I should greet you in the name of Jesus that the wonderful Papa is talking about this morning. We have heard that our chairperson is not present today, and the other co-chair from another committee is also not here. The wife is sick, and we wish the wife a speedy recovery. The wife of wonderful Papa. We are just going to start with the program. I'm not going to say anything because I'm not used to sitting here. I sit that side, as I said, and decorate this side because they only have me as their flower. So today they don't want me next to them, so I am here. But you failed. Okay, over to you, Gigi. Oh, my apology. Do we still have another person? Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. We do have other apologies. We've got a written apology from Honorable Lawrence, Honorable Mathebula, and also Honorable Vowler.
Okay, the last apology for Honorable Makwebo. Because he left his own way to go and attend the matter of Parliament. What? We can continue.
Honorable Chair, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to present. As you know, we are presenting today, at your request, our annual performance plan, our APP for 2018 to 2021. As you can see, our annual performance plan is quite a thick document which we have submitted to both houses. And I will try to be as brief as possible and to just summarize what are our strategic interventions and how we have put that into the APP. As you can see, I've got a very, DTI has a number of divisions where we specialize in our work, which I will take you through very briefly, but our team here are the heads or acting heads of those divisions. Many of the deputy director generals are also engaged in other activities. Some of them are abroad and so on, but we have a full team here in terms of any specific questions. So I'll go quickly through, firstly, setting out our key goals. Then I'll give an economic overview because we are in a critical period in our economy, especially in the first quarter of this year. Then I'll go through the details of the key interventions, and I'll give a summary, and then I'll look at our budget and whether we've got sufficient resources to achieve our goals. Very quickly, all of our activities are aimed at achieving a dynamic and globally competitive manufacturing sector, but also we emphasize inclusive growth. As you know, we need to ensure that our growth and development includes all our people. If we summarize it very briefly, DTI has three big objectives. The one is what we would call industrialization. The second one is transformation. And the third one is creating a regulatory environment which is good for companies and good for consumers. Those are three, that's what DTI stands for, transformation and industrialization. These, as I referred to, we've broken our work into these areas. As you know, we've got a specialized line of work on international trade, then on industrial development, on investment, and so forth. Very quickly, Honorable Chair, I want to just take through where we are, because as you know, we need to be a dynamic organization which responds to the current global economic trends. So if we look at the global context, as you know, world growth has been slowed down, but the good news is that globally, all of our key markets are picking up, and there's an expectation that growth globally will reach 3.9%. That is a pickup from previous years, and also especially in Europe and Asia, there are expectations of growth picking up. But also in the emerging markets, again, there is also good news that growth is expected to reach 4.9%. And especially good for us because, as you know, because of the drop in the oil price and commodity prices, even sub-Saharan Africa has not been performing well, but even there, it is expected 3.5% growth. Then looking at South Africa, as you know, we've had very, very tepid growth rates. In 2016, it was 0.6%, a very slow growth. But the good news, again, is that growth has been picking up in the last quarter of 2017, and especially we see good prospects for the first quarter of this year. The Tumamina is taking effect even in our economy, and you will see improved levels of confidence. So, as I indicated, in the quarter, the last quarter of 2017, we had growth of 3.1%. And for the year as a whole, it was 1.3% growth compared to 0.6% in 2016. So, as you can see, it's still very low, but as I said, it's better than where we do. The positive prospects in our economy is driven by two big factors. As you know, we're recovering from the massive drought we had, and therefore you'll see this big pickup in agriculture. And then secondly, there is a pickup again in our mining industry with commodity prices, gold price, iron ore price are picking up. Except for platinum, all the other prices are picking up again. So that is what we're saying. We are now optimistic that for 2018, cautiously optimistic that we'll maybe reach the even Treasury and the rating agencies have all revised their growth rates. We expect cautiously 1.5% growth for 2018. The positive indications is that for the first time, as you know, the Purchasing Manager Index is what purchasing managers in companies say they expect the order book to be like. And the magical figure is if you hit 50%, it indicates growth. and below 50% means you're declining. So we have hit now the 50% mark for the Purchase Manager Index. So especially good has been, as I said, the first quarter of this year. As you can see, for 8 months last year, it was below 50%. Now it's above 50%. Similarly, we can see in terms of unemployment, again, unemployment, at least employment appeared to have stabilized, and there's been a slight decrease in the unemployment rate. It's still very slight, from 27.7 to 26.7, but at least it's stabilizing. And in quarter two, 2016, since quarter two, 2016, we've created just over half a million jobs, 626,000 jobs. As I said, again, obviously our unemployment rate is so high that anything looks small, but it's still important to note that there is job growth in the economy, and the economy created 626,000 jobs. Our exports are also picking up, and you can see that showing in the graph, and you can look at the trend line again. There is an improvement in our manufacturing trade, especially you can see our trade with the continent is constantly improving. The green line there shows our exports to the continent, and as you can see, it's always going up. The only worry is that the blue line is our imports. And as you say, unfortunately, our imports are not increasing from the continent. So what it means is our trade balance is almost 4-1 with the continent, which is a worry, because as you know, for example, in quarter four, we exported 84 billion worth of goods to the continent, but we only imported 26 billion. So you're going to, it's not sustainable in the long run, because the other economies are going to say, we just buy from South Africa, but South Africa doesn't buy from us. So therefore, the importance of opening up our own market for African and for industrialization on the continent is key. Then I'll go straight into, given that context, as I said, which is looked for a number of years, for almost 4 or 5 years now, for the first time, there's a positive mood in the country. Investment confidence is back, consumer confidence is back. So we do, we are a bit more optimistic about our interventions, and we'll see. So our first intervention area, and the details is laid out in the, but our first one is that, as you know, we consolidate all of our interventions in manufacturing. We put into our industrial policy action plan, and therefore every year we take to cabinet a updated annual rolling plan, and we've laid out then for the next 5 years we will do that. In terms of investments, we hope to, through all our incentive programs and all our interventions, we hope to leverage 15 billion rand this year. In terms of jobs, we hope to create 10,000 new jobs, and then to retain another 20,000 jobs, so 30,000 jobs we will be supporting, and the number of companies we will help across all our incentives is 850 companies we will support the different support measures. Honourable Chair, that's our detail. Then, as I said, then we lay out in detail what we do in each year, and it's set out in this APP. For example, we're laying out over the five-year period, we will do 12 designations, and then in 2018-19, you will see there's two, in 2019 another two, and in 2021 another two. So spell out, I won't go through each one in detail. And then what we attach then is our budget for this program, and you can see we've got 1.6 billion allocated for achieving those objectives I've laid out, our investment targets, our job targets, and so on. If we then look at investment and incentive administration, we then lay out our target of 15 billion. We lay out our proposed targets for each of the years of the APP. The APP is done over 3 years, so we do it 2018-19, 2019-20, and 2021, and the details are spelled out in detail for that year. This is just an overview of our incentives for the previous year and gives you some indication, and as you can see, our programs reflect, if you look at that, that's our broader participation. These are our manufacturing incentives, And you can, for example, agriculture development, you'll see there's two in Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and it's spread across the country. Usually this reflects the current economic structure and the applications that we receive from different provinces. Of course, we have interventions which tries to stimulate certain kinds of economic activity in the area. These are infrastructure incentives and services incentives, and then our competitive incentives. If we then turn to incentive administration, we lay out our budget here, and as you know, the incentives, the 850 companies we support, this is the biggest part of our budget, and as you can see, in 2018-19, it's allocated 6 billion rand, which will go to our different incentives. You will then also see that we have different kinds of incentives for different needs. For example, we have incentives aimed at broadening participation. We have aimed at manufacturing, at infrastructure support, like our industrial parks and so on. And then we've got service incentives and so on. But in total, they come to just over 6 billion rand. Then turning to trade and investment, our target there is 50 billion rand. That's the pipeline for the year. We hope to attract into the economy over the next 12 months is 50 billion rand. And as you know, we have set up the Investment South Africa, which is a one-stop shop, where we will push this pipeline of projects. Then turning to trade, and I spoke to one of the honorable members about this, these are the trade agreements that we are pursuing and that we have completed already. So we've completed the agreement with the European Union and so on, and that one is going to be its monitoring and its implementation so that we take advantage of our new opportunities there. So, for example, especially with Europe, there's new opportunities we've opened up for sugar, for agricultural products, and so on. And we will then table two reports for the year on exactly how that is doing. Then we've also got our big focus is going to be our agreements on the continent, and especially the East African COMESA, with Kenya being a big driver there. So it's that free trade agreement, and then there's the continental free trade agreement. So these are things. What we also then do is we also provide incentives for small companies to take trips abroad to look for export opportunities or to go to trade shows. There our target is to help 823 companies with export marketing assistance, and this is mainly aimed for smaller companies. And then we've set a target of 4 billion rand of exports from these small companies. Honorable Chair, again in the table we lay out then what we're going to do in each year, and it's set out there for in terms of our trade opportunities. And then the budget there is 124 million for ITED, which is mainly operational expenses for these programs. Chair, we set out again there the detail of how we hope to achieve that and for which year, and then we set out the budget for those allocations. Set out in detail. Then we turn to the other big area of work, which is transformation and broadening our participation. Here, our biggest work is the special economic zone, and as you know, we have the target of having one SEZ in every province. And we are well on our way, and we hope to every year do a minimum of one new special economic zone. And as you know, currently we are busy with the one in Mpumalanga. We have done the one in the Limpopo. We've completed the one in the Free State. And then next is going to be the Northwest, which is quite far advanced, the Bojanala SEZ, and then Northern Cape. Is our next one. We've also just completed Atlantis, and as I said, Mpumalanga. Then also, as you know, we've got a very active industrial parks program where we cover industrial parks across all the provinces, where we're revitalizing these industrial parks, and we will submit reports on these programs. then obviously the big work is going to be just the BEE Amendment Act and the Codes of Good Practice. As you know, these covers the existing companies and their transformation program. And these things are starting to have an effect. But as I said, the private sector has been moving very slow over previous years. But as I said, the pressure is building up, and we find more and more as government tightens, the licensing, the incentives, we are now making it a precondition that you must have a certain level of BE performance. That is forcing companies now to do the transformation and to improve their scores. And then, as you know, we now have we've concluded our first year on the Black Industrialist Program. We've achieved our target of 100 Black Industrialists. So this is going to be our next program, and our plan is to have 90 interventions to support Black Industrialists. We've already provided support to over 100, and this is now for the new year. We hope to do 90 interventions. Important to note here, it's going to be both finance and non-financial support. Most of our companies, as you know, because they were denied access to the market, they couldn't sell to ShopRite and to Woolworths and the supply the big companies like Anglo American and Sasol. We, a big part of the Black Industrialist Program now is to get black-owned companies to access those markets. So it's not only getting financial support, because you can have the best machinery and equipment, you can have the best factory, but if people don't sell the product, and if there isn't a busy market for that, you can't run a company. So we're also shifting a lot of support now to creating markets and to ensure that big companies open up their supply chains and their procurement chains to black companies. So those are the Black Industrialist Program. It's going to be our key flagship program for the year. And then we've set out in detail our program in our APP, and then our budget is laid out there. Then getting to the final area before getting to the administration is the other, as I said, our work is industrialization, transformation, and a good regulatory environment for both consumers and businesses. Here, our big current legislation is going to be the Companies Amendment Bill, and then also we're currently busy with the gambling, improvements to the gambling legislation, the liquor, the credit, and then the performance and copyright, this is for our artists and our musicians. The Copyright Amendment Bill, so we will develop progress reports on all those areas, and then we will also do the social impact assessment for the Companies Amendment Bill. And then, as you know, a lot of this is promotion, and we will be running 24 education awareness programs. As you know, we go across the to all provinces and down to the grassroots level where we educate people about our programs. Then we lay out in detail here, and I won't go into the detail, but as I said, those are our four or five pieces of legislation that is our focus, and we set out the budget. And then finally, turning, as you know, you need a well-oiled machine to implement those programs, and so we put a lot into building a knowledge organization. Our staff turnover rate, we are doing quite well there in terms of maintaining our staff, and especially we're doing... as you know, our target with employment of people with disability, there we achieved our target of 3.6%. But most important, I can announce there, we've got our Deputy Director General, Sarah Chwane, here. We've just won a major award for the work we're doing and for the targets we're keeping with employing people with disability. And so I really, we stand behind this division for achieving this objective. And then also we have hit the target in terms of women. We've got the 50-50 now in senior women, not only at the bottom of the organization, but in the top senior positions, we are 51% women. And then also, as we said, we're always the champions for payments, credit payments. We've kept the record. We again have the record in our APP. 100% of our payments must be made within 30 days, and as we know, most of them are done within 50 days, but our target is to achieve the 100%. The details are laid out here, and they, as you can see, our biggest budget here, which is our compensation budget, which is the 760 million rand, that's for our administration, and then in detail we lay out our budget for our different areas. And as I said, the bulk of our budget goes directly to companies, to the over 800 companies we support, and it's laid out there. 6.4 billion is to incentive administration, then to industrial development, it's 1.7 billion, and then also a big amount to the special economic zone and the infrastructure investment that's laid out, which brings us to a total budget of just under 10 billion that we have as the department. But as I said, 90% of it goes directly to investment-related activity by companies. Honorable Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. We really appreciate that. Honorable members, here is the presentation in front of us. Can I check if there were the honorable members? I have the hand of Honorable Patis, Honorable Saba, Honorable Ntebe, Honorable Mshanga, all of them. We'll start with the honorable member Patis, and then we'll go like that. It will be the next one, Srim Kanga 4. The last one is the honorable Ted. Over to you.
Chair, let me appreciate the opportunity and welcome to the presentation. I want to pose a few questions. The first one is on your international agreement and the bilateral that we have with EU. CG, I want you to look at me. I know I'm too black. Here in Parliament.
Honorable Pagis, so the DG. Honorable Pagis, the DG is at liberty to write as you speak. So he cannot look at you and look at the people.
You are facing the other day.
Okay.
Look. Here in Parliament, DG, I'm a convener of ACP focus group delegated by Parliament. And at that level, international level, you engage with EU in the context of your ACP. And I learned to get the information that in the context of your bilateral with EU, there are resources that are being deployed to South Africa, certain projects, blah, blah, blah. But then my major concern is, are we dragging down those projects, and how do we quantify the impact of those projects, given the resources that are being deployed, and how many jobs are being created by those projects, and the impact on the quality of life and the living standard of our people. The second question that I want to pose relates to the imposition of the U.S. Sanctions against Iran. Iran, how does that impact on our workings and functioning at this particular department, and the recent past imposition again on the tariffs on the steel, if I'm not mistaken, the steel tariff. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. DG, maybe we must congratulate you once more on the You are far surpassed the expectation on the disability percentage. Sitting at 3.6, the expectation is 2%. Maybe also the 50% gender representation quantifies the level of productivity in your department. I mean, females can work. Congratulations. But you know. But you know, DG, my views are known to your department. You are a hard-working department, but you can do better. Let me give you an example. You know, The Sustainable Developmental Goals number 9 talks about resilient infrastructure and very rigorous industrialization. When are we going to see the things that we can touch and feel that are speaking to those in your department? I know that you are doing very much, but you can do better. I can make an example. In the other department that reports to us, the EDD, there's 857 million budget cut. You know what that allocated for infrastructure? Now, if you talk about subnational governance, talk about province and local, that infrastructure talks about infrastructure that is so needed for a conducive investment environment. So if I'm a domestic investor or whatever, a form of a foreign direct investment, and I want to come and invest, and there's no infrastructure that is going to be an enabler for me to be able to be productive, I will not be able to invest in such an environment. So if I'm producing goods and services, there must be space and distance in between that can be able to make sure that I flourish. And I can't do that in the absence of infrastructure. So these are the things that probably I thought that your analysis of a department will also touch on them to say, these are the things that are impeding on our progress, and this is how then we seek to mitigate moving forward. Look at your slide number 8, for instance, your global economic context. Sub-Saharan Africa is projected to grow by 3.3% in 2018 and 3.5% in 2019. But me and you know that 70% of our sub-Saharan people depends on agriculture, which is a seasonal work, by the way. We're still over-concentrated on commodity exports. And there's no moving away from diversifying so that, for how long is Nigeria going to take more than 75% of their revenue from petrodollars? For how long is South Africa going to be taking 60% of our revenue from a variety of commodities? When are we moving away from this? And this is not, so if we need to see Sub-Sahara growing faster than this, diversifying of this economy needs to happen. And it can't happen if the majority of our people are still concentrating or looking at agriculture as a form. Yes, agriculture is a massive GDP contributor, but it's seasonal. And in the meantime that there's no productivity in agriculture, what do you do to complement? If you go to, and maybe we must applaud you again. Quarter one result says that we recorded a trade surplus, 98% of our exports versus 88% of our imports. I think it's something that needs to be built upon. There's no economy in the world, Gigi, that does not look and concentrate on trade balance. There's no economy that can work. If we can't stabilize our trade balance, we will not be able to move. So we're looking at our exports and we're trying to say what is it that we can be able to improve. But in your presentation, in the other departments that seeks to complement your department, there seems to be very isolated incidents that are seeking to complement each other. And I think we can do better. The other issue I must reserve for the comment from the DG. I will then make a follow-up. Thanks.
No, thank you, Chair. I think I must also join the very same chorus to welcome the presentation and the accurate information that has been given to us as per your knowledge, DG. But, Chair, perhaps my question will be around the... Only, of course, I won't go directly to issues of the technocratic issues, your administration and so on. I'll just go directly on issues of political, more of political. For example, your strategic goals, Chair, it says they are building mutual beneficial regional and global relations. That is one of your principles. And now, I will also focus on the issues of your international program, and I'm very, very, very concerned on around issues of your United Arab Emirates trade deal. But when I'm looking at the presentation, I don't see any. And in my knowledge, there are some trade deals that are entered between the two countries. I don't want to go to detail on them, but I gave you some of those. Of course, you gave me that some explanation, but when I look at your bullet C, it talks of agreements of cooperative and developmental of industrial relations. Now, my concern is that we are dealing with your MPP, and if we don't have some of these agreements, some of them are dated long, 5 years ago or 3 years ago, and nothing is happening. They're not ratified, or there's none like seeing an interest on those mutual agreements or memorandum. So my request here will be that I foresee that there's none in this document. But maybe next time they come, they can please give us more clarification why these trade deals that are entered between the two countries, the United Arab Emirates and South Africa. The other one, Chair, is the monitoring system around your BEE compliance target. What measures do you have to monitor the compliance? Because I'm from an industrial area, Mpumalanga, Witban. There is much industrial there. And I foresee there's no, in terms of BEE compliance, there's no compliance. Now, I just want to know, I know maybe it may not be your task, but there's a department. What measures do you put in terms of monitoring the target? On your industrial park, you know very well that in Mpumalanga we have Highveld. That was Highveld still intended to be an industrial park.
Think of in that regard.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Chairperson, I just want to show the department the picture. I made a small little drawing here. And if you look there, the Northern Cape, if you take the Eastern Cape and the Northern Cape, it's actually Eastern Cape and Western Cape, it fits into the Northern Cape.
No.
It takes East Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, they fit in the Northern Cape. Okay, Northwest, Mpumalanga, or even Mpumalanga and Limpopo, they fit into the Northern Cape. We are by far the biggest province. Now, what my problem is, and it's a big problem, we're talking about manufacturing and service incentives like on page 23, and there's zero for the Northern Cape. Now, how is it possible that the province, the last time I saw the Northern Cape, we got a coastline here on the west side, which is much closer to the US and much closer to Europe than the Western Cape, Eastern Cape, or KZN. Now, there was plans on the floor for a corridor from the northern parts of the Northern Cape. Now, I already gave a whole stick with that information of a corridor that was already planned. It was in detail planned. I gave it to this department 3-4 years ago. Till today, I have heard nothing. Honorable Beekers, that used to be our MEC and COCTA in the Northern Cape, is now here sitting in the National Assembly. I spoke to him. I said to him, Alvin, what happened? He says, Ms. RTTI. I said, but listen, I gave it to you guys 3-4 years ago. Till today, I know you do long-term planning, but gosh, how long? Nothing has happened. Now, I see you talking about the SEZ Northern. I want to ask, when you said Northern Cape, I want to know where and exactly where. Because we are almost finished with this term, and in this term, absolutely nothing has happened. I can tell you the one thing I was excited about was in Mafaring, there was grain silo storage facilities that DTI, because when we did oversight, I must be quite honest, in the Northern Cape, everything went south. The only thing that really gave a bit of light to me was the grain storage facility silos where DTI was actually involved with. But then the sad story was DTI apparently ran out of money there, and they're waiting. Now, I mean, I need to understand how come you guys have started this whole thing, it's next to the railway network, and now there's no money, and they're waiting for DTI. Now, I can tell you, we've been waiting now almost again for a year. After the silos are up, but they're waiting for a year. It can't be like that. Then you're talking about export and import and on the trade balances 4-1 for Africa. I know, I want to know. Is this trade balance 4-1 for you to set Africa? Is that Africa or South Africa? Because there's a bit of a difference. It's like a chair and electric chair, bit of a difference. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me commend your presentation. You know, if you do such a presentation, it's encouraging that our economy is moving forward. My question is, what can you do more to make it possible for us that our economy grow faster than the way it is right now? Secondly, DG, you got a very good blend of the small companies. The only thing that I want to know there is that how do you do select those companies, or you just look at into your database, or there's another way that you're doing it. Lastly, South Africa, especially this government, was perceived as a corrupt government. And the most of the world. But after the Tumamina, what is the reaction of the world? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mteta. Honorable Pike.
Tumamina. The project.
Order, Honorable Faber and Honorable Mteta, you will can pass our
I have two points that I want to raise. This, you said in your presentation, your black industrialists are without the possibility of, I'm not quoting you verbatim, the possibility of access to the market. Didn't you integrate in your plan or strategic overview that element of access to the market? I'm raising this precisely because your Department of Rural Development and Land Reform has initiated the scheme of agriculture. And time and again, when we engage the department and dissect issues on the table, we find that these agriculture are not progressive. And key to that is the structure of the economy, the structural transformation of our economy. And with lack or absence of penetration to the white and male dominated market in terms of the business. That's the point that I want to raise. But linked to that, I believe the department has a good departmental or sister or brother relationship with your agriculture or Department of Agriculture. Chair, I want to use this opportunity or platform to raise what always haunts me. Here in Parliament, we have voted for land expropriation without compensation. Yes, albeit others are venting their imprecation against that direction. And you know some of leaders in our agricultural organizations, they remain conservative and racist. Now, if we are to talk about transformation of our economy and manufacturing, our people are not participating in the subsector of milling, or let me call it mill subsector, mill industry, which talks to Chair, the issue of food security
Honorable Mtanga, you raised the issues and now you're leaving. Who is going to listen to your response? Actually, we're supposed to sit because you did not even apologize from the beginning of the meeting. But because you're an adult, we'll allow you to go. Next time, don't repeat it. Thanks.
The kernel of the point, Chair, that I'm making is our people are not participating in that space of milling industry. Our people are not owning mills. I hope you understand what I'm saying. Which goes to the context or to the level of the ownership of such mills, where your maize meal is being stored, companies that are giving or producing bread for us. I'm not sure whether I do make sense to you. Thank you
very much, Honorable Parkis. You really do make sense. And if maybe what you are saying does not make sense, you won't get the response of it. I know they are going to reply in what you read. DG, let me join my colleague in congratulating your department for the very good percentage that you're having when it comes to the vulnerable group of people, the people with disability and us women. Really, you need an accolade on this one. And also to request you to continue to do this. I don't think there'll be any sense much if you can hire all the people with disability in your department and have 100%. Well, the Honorable Faba touched on the issue of the special economic zones in the province. I want to also continue to say, if you can give us a timeline as to when are you going to touch on the provinces that are remaining, and also to check as to whether there is monitoring with regards to our provinces like Limpopo. Well, this time we were fortunate because Limpopo is amongst one of the important provinces because they have been touched by this SEZ. Yes. Well, he spoke about slide number 22, 23, 24, but next time when you put in on this, it's better if you also write the population, because the province might be vast and you find that there are no people compared to our province, whereby by the drawing it looks like it's small, but population, yes, and the people who are not even working there, unemployed. Well, I think you are trying when it comes to slide number 11. But to me, 626,000 jobs is still not good compared to the number of the people who are unemployed. Maybe if we can also try and push on that one. And I also want to congratulate you for the work that you're doing when it comes to the bilateral. But I wanted you to give us a thorough explanation when it comes to the UK Brexit, because I know these people does not support our country. The other honourable members touched and they raised a very sharp point, and it was so clear. Over to you, DG. Your colleague, if ever maybe after responding, they hear that it did not touch on other issues, they can come in. They are allowed. Over to you.
Honourable Chair, thanks for that question. As you know, it is a standing rule that the difficult questions are handled by my colleagues, so I will implement that. Honourable Fakis, I think asked about the very important question. I'll deal with the land issue later, but and the milling. But the question of the EU is very important, and as you mentioned about the African, Caribbean, the Pacific, the ACP issue. As you know, there's lots of donor support which comes from the European Union, and you're absolutely right. Previously, that donor support was government to government, and it was sort of capacity building, it was to justice, to and so on. What we did a few years ago is that we tried to change that support system, and that's why we've got one program that we, even though it's still, the money is still controlled from National Treasury, we implement what we call the ECF program, which is the Employment Creation Fund, and we transfer this to our division, and I'll ask the Malevo, our DDG, to just on that. What we've done is we've said that all that money must go to rural projects mainly. So that's why we've got, and I think the one that Honourable Farber mentioned as well, the grain silos, we've actually said all of those projects must go to areas which don't get any of the other kinds of government support. So we've got a good progress. For the first time, we've hit the deep rural areas of our country. So what we've done is we've said it also goes directly to the recipients, not to another government department. Yeah, we've got many. We've got the macadamia nuts. So we've got many in Rusiki, in different parts of the province. Unfortunately, the one is that we didn't. Treasury has kept back the second tranche of that money, and that is why we have that problem at the moment, where people are waiting for the second tranche, and that is we are putting massive pressure on National Treasury, and if you can also. In whatever committees you have, this project is unprecedented in the terms of it. I mean, they just completed an audit, and they said for the first time, when the auditors went out there, they have to drive 3-4 hours to get to the projects, and it's very important for labour intensiveness. It's rural, it's agricultural, and so on. So I would say we are doing that, but we want to get our colleagues on board in National Treasury to say this is how donor funding should now be used. Let's talk about government to government. Let's see that the projects go live to especially those enterprises which don't get a sort of normal bank loans and from IDC funding or DTI funding. But I'll ask Malevo to come in there. And then your other big question is correct. The U.S., as I said, the global economy is picking up, and things was looking very positive. But there is a big risk now in the global economy. And that big risk is now, as you can see, it's happening in Italy, in Europe, all of a sudden, because of the rise of the right. They're scaring the market, but also the U.S. is acting very, very erratically. So on the one hand, we, as you know, we were making very good progress when they lifted the sanctions on Iran. And as you know, we are big investors there. MTN is big there. But unfortunately, the situation is now again back to square one with Iran. And then especially we are now becoming collateral damage between the big trade war between China and the U.S. We are becoming what the minister called collateral damage. For example, our steel, we only make up 1% of the exports to the U.S. In terms of them, when they import, most of it comes from Europe, most of it comes from China. Well, we make up 1%, but as you know, we've been hit by the tariff on steel and aluminium. What we have done is we've acted preemptively. We had two big engagements with the U.S. to try to stop them from implementing those tariffs, but unfortunately it didn't work. And then we had met with the companies that's affected, all our steel companies and our aluminium companies who are exported to the U.S. So we've got a task team working with the industry to see how we can mitigate the impact. And what we're doing there is that we're getting the companies who are importing our products. And sometimes, for example, we make specialized aluminium for the Tesla cars, you know, the electric vehicles in the U.S. They get the aluminium from Ulliman. We're asking those companies to try to put pressure as well on the U.S. government to drop those tariffs. But as I said, because the U.S. is such a big player, they obviously have a lot of power. Honorable Mtebe, yes, I think thanks for that issue you've said about our work in different areas. But as you said, we can do more. And I think you're absolutely spot on with your about the infrastructure. Nobody can come to a country if there's no infrastructure. And also sometimes you have to build that infrastructure ahead of the curve. Because as I said, sometimes that infrastructure is going to lay there for a long while, and then you have to wait for people to take up. As you can see, Kuha, after almost 15 years now, they are only now reaping the full benefits. But that big investment in those years when people called it a white elephant, as you know, Shabir serves on the board there of Kuha, they are now almost fully, they've got 38 investors. And as you know, they are completing now the $12 billion project of an auto plant in Kuha Industrial Development Zone. East London Development Zone also is doing very well. But as I said, they made this investment 5-10 years ago, and they are seeing the benefits. So that is why we are actively working on this SEZ program and the other problems. Honorable members, it's important to explain how we work with the special economic zones. These DTIs are playing a very active role to stimulate the provinces to do this work, but ultimately the province owns the SEZ, and they manage the SEZ. But so what we have set up now to get everybody on board, we have set up, we give people money to employ staff in the province to work on their SEZ project and to get it going. We also second our own staff from head office into the provinces to help them to work on getting SEZs going. But ultimately, it must be driven by the province. You can't, we can provide as much support as possible. So provinces get moving when they do put management teams on the ground to be able to run the SEZ and to do the work, and we give as much support as possible. So as I said, for example, with we've now covered everybody. We just need, we've got Northwest and we've got Northern Cape that we are still need to get there. Again, it initially started with Northwest, with Northern Cape. It was Upington. The provinces proposed that. As I said, it's been going very slowly there. We've asked them to also to look at other options because, for example, there's a big investment in zinc that is being made and so on, and we said, why don't you build a SEZ around that, around the ports maybe. They're much more viable because Upington relies on solar and it relies on the RIPP program. When government, I mean, luckily that program is now back on track. So maybe, as I said, but we are all constantly supporting the province to drive the SEZ. As I said, unfortunately, Northwest, they initially went for the Platinum Valley in Rustenburg area, Bojanala region, but then they stopped that one and they wanted to go for a agricultural SEZ. Now they're back to the platinum. So we are really supporting that because we think that one does have a lot of potential, but so work is now back on track to get that SEZ going. But as I said, ultimately the land belongs to the province and it's for the, we need to do that. But Honorable Mchanga asked about the UAE, and I will ask Yunus to say about that. But also he asked about the BEE compliance. And I can just say, even though he's not here, is that the way we tried to implement the BEE, when we amended the Act in 2014, where we basically said that it's no longer best endeavors or sort of general commitments. We're saying that every government department and every license we issue, every procurement we make, you must, and every incentive we give, we must attach BEE compliance to that. So that, as I said, is now starting to have an effect. For example, because of ICASA, they've set 30% ownership, and therefore you can see the big telecoms companies are doing and implementing empowerment now as well. We've done it for our incentives, and you can see the companies are starting to comply. But as I said, it's very recent that we've done that. Honorable Faber, I don't know the specific project you're speaking about. I don't know if my colleagues know. But the way our incentives work is that obviously we manage, as I said, every year we support about 4,000 companies in total across the value chain, from EMEA to ones and so on. Because we're dispensing government funds, we have strict criteria for those incentives. And the main thing is, so people have to apply. Obviously, we run awareness programs to tell people about the program, and we run workshops. But it's the company that apply, but the company must show that they are investing in plant and machinery and equipment. They're not going to use the money to buy themselves a BMW or they get to just keep the money in their bank account. And we have inspectors that go out. Before we approve a project, there must be a due diligence to see the company actually exists. And it's not a fly-by-night company. It's not going to move back over the border like they used to do to Lesotho. It's really a company. So that we know that the money is up to help manufacturing. So, as I said, and obviously a company must be sustainable. We must know that the money is going to be, that it's not only going to rely on the government grant, because as you know, many projects close down as soon as they spend the government money, the factory closes. We must see that there's actually market demand and so on. So, as I said, that is the criteria, and that's why we try to work as much with every company to help them to get their project plan right, to do the application properly and so on. So that is that, and as I explained, with the grain silo, I think that could be the ECF scheme, Employment Creation Fund. We hope the audit was done last week, was completed by National Treasury, so hopefully they will release the second tranche now. And I think, as I indicated, they've seen for themselves these projects. They've visited all of them, and they've seen them. They've spoken to the owners and the farmers themselves, and the farmers have told them, we need this money. And actually, the project is, people are retrenching people now because they haven't received the money. But as I said, ultimately, that money is not on our budget. That money is from the EU. And all money, the only funding goes to our National Treasury in terms of that. Along Tetwa, I think the new dawn, the Tumamina, is really there's for the first time ever, for a long time, we see now, as you know, investors have been sitting on their projects. They've been postponing the dates. Sometimes we grant them the incentive, but they don't take it up. We tell them, no, you'll get the incentive if you start investing, but they sit on it. There's been a sea change in the attitude. It's actually, it's not just talk. Today in Atlantis, they're relaunching the Cisco Steel Mill. There was talk about the Middelburg area. There is in Mpumalanga, lots of projects are coming back on the table. Lots of investors are now expediting, and Eunice Zuya with Invest SA is much more busy than he's ever been with regards to the prospect. So it is there is a renewed confidence and so on. And I think also with the investment, as you know, the reason we, I think Honorable Pakis raised it and Honorable Chair, you've raised it, is that the biggest impediment to our growth is that we've got a very, very distorted capitalist system in this country. Because, as you know, if you take our vast and northern Cape East, people don't have land. People don't. People aren't able to enter the market because they don't have access to that market. As you know, Checkers, all of these companies we must supply to, they just buy from Unilever and from Tiger Brand. If you're in a black entrepreneur, you can't enter that space. So our biggest problem is the exclusion of the 90% from this economy. And as you know, in any normal market capitalist economy, the key thing is everybody is allowed to own property. And everybody was allowed to start a business. And everybody was allowed to compete equally on the basis of your product, not on the basis of your race. So what we've got is we've got a very skewed structure in our economy. Whereas all of our, we find our black enterprises are in our industrial parks, where there's not even proper roads, where there's not proper infrastructure. And then secondly, our demand in the economy is very low because of the history of low wages. So there isn't demand, so we have to rely on other markets to drive our economy. We have to rely on the continent now, we have to rely on Europe, and we have to rely on the U.S. Whereas, in all those other economies, 80% of their demand is domestic demand. It's their own population or the population in their region that drives the economy. We've got this problem where our consumption is so low within the country because of a history of exclusion and low wages that we have to, we're so reliant on the U.S., we're so reliant on Europe, and we now rely on the continent as well. So the biggest job we're doing, as I said, and that's why the work on the continent is important, but also even little things like the minimum wage, which came through yesterday, is very important because it raises disposable income, means people can demand more. Because as you know, of GDP, 60% is consumption, is household spending that drives your GDP. And if you've got lower household spending, you've got low GDP. And so, as I said, that's why we always see transformation as the key thing. Redistribution of land is going to be key. Access to grain markets, to milling, and so on. So that's why we can't just have, the economy won't grow unless we do redistribution of land, unless we develop our township industrial parks, unless we develop new SEZs. We're not going to grow the economy. And then, Honorable Chair, I'll just hand over to my colleague to just follow up on some of the other ones.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, with regard to some of the projects that we have supported, particularly in the Eastern Cape, or through the donor funding, DG spoke about the Employment Creation Fund. One of those is the Amajiri, the macadamia farming. The other one is the integrated waste and recycling services, also in the Eastern Cape. The Blue Karoo Trust, what they do is they are in aquaculture, so they breed the fish and then they do the processing of that fish. And then, of course, in Mbovana Fishing, they're working on crayfish, and they've got a processing facility there on the crayfish. The interesting bit about this incentive, if I may call it that, is that it was the first time we were able to dictate to the beneficiaries that you will include in your shareholding your workers. So because it was donor funding, we are able to go even to those extremes. So in some of these projects, there are worker trusts that ensures that the workers have a stake in the ownership. And as the DG has said, most of these projects are not in the typical East London PE areas. They are in the very rural areas of the particular provinces. And we do have a number of these projects spread around most provinces, including Limpopo, including even in the Northern Cape. And indeed, we've got around two projects, big projects, around milling and ensuring that we are correcting that issue in milling, because part of the problem there is if you are unable to get enough farmers to support the mill, then the that milling facility will not work. And in most instances, black farmers are unable to enter the mills because the current mills have their order book from the established farmers. So that itself is a prohibitory act, and through this fund we've been able to support that. So yeah, I think if members want information on more of this project, we could make that available so that you would see what that money was used for. And as DG has indicated, we did hit a snag with National Treasury in terms of timely release of funds. We're trying very hard to correct that. And their own audit has revealed that most of these projects are indeed very good projects, and we're hoping that having finalized their own audit, now we would be in a better place to receive that money and finish some of this project. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do you still have okay?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, DG. Just a quick question on the international agreement on trade agreements. We do not have a trade agreement with the UAE. What we have is a bilateral relationship in terms of a joint economic commission between the UAE, and basically 60% of our exports into the Middle East go via the UAE. So on the UAE basis, we just have, and for that matter, in the Middle East, we don't have any trade agreement in the Middle East. We just have bilateral relationships and economic relationships with both countries in the Middle East. And then on the question of Iran, as you're aware of the U.S. pulled out of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, and it relates to particular sectors of energy, petrochemicals, and financial services. This is where the sanctions hit hard. What we're doing through our Durko minister, and Durko is that we've checked out through Durko that in terms of our legal advice, we've got the status quo should revert to how it was previously, and the Durko minister is currently trying to meet the high U.S. counterpart to look into areas where we can ask for exemptions on humanitarian grounds, so to work on sectors like healthcare and agro-processing, and then also to look at areas where we can work outside the sanctions areas and sectors with Iran, where South African companies do not have exposure to the U.S. So currently, there's quite a lot of geopolitical dynamics in the Middle East itself. And previously, when sanctions was imposed, it was both the EU and the U.S. And this time, it's only the U.S. So the EU hasn't imposed any sanctions on Iran. So South Africa is bound by, as a member of the UN, bound by the UN resolutions, and South Africa is fine to multinationals. And so that's why I think there's this discussion that our telecom minister is going to have quite soon over the U.S. counterpart to see what we can work on and what exemptions we can seek to work with Iran.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there anything that you want to say? You're done. Honorable members, is there a follow-up?
That's a minor follow-up.
Okay.
Yes, I will accept that we be furnished with that information so that we know the issue province, where are these projects being located. The second issue is a minor check. This donor funding, how do we access it? Or who initiates the project? Is the department or our people initiate and put submission for a particular project?
Thank you very much, Chair. It's projects that are initiated by the project champion, and those project champions will then approach the department. And like the DG said, one of the key criteria there is that this project must be in rural areas. And then based on an assessment process that is done by an adjudication committee, which is interdepartmental, because these were monies that were allocated to the economic cluster, not the DTI. After that process is done, we then take over the administration of the project, which will include making sure that what the project champion says has been done, and then making sure that the funding flows as it should flow. But the money, as DG also indicated, is not on our budget. require is at National Treasury. That is why when National Treasury is unable to release those funds, we can then continue the support function we need to play for those projects to come to fruition and to grow.
Okay, thank you very much, Department, and thank you, Honorable Members. Thank you very much, Honorable Members, for availing yourself. Otherwise, we were not going to have this meeting if you didn't come. DG and your team, we will always appreciate the work that you're doing for us and the community out there. Please keep up the good work. Honorable Members, this meeting is adjourned.